that I began with this, as I've said, in 1988 with a call from the Archbishop of St. John's, Newfoundland, at the beginning, the very beginning of the major public revelations of this crisis in Canada. We did fabulous work on that commission. It's now recognized as being, it's a canon in the clergy abuse literature. We identified systemic and cultural issues that needed to be dealt with. I was then asked, as we delivered that report in 1990, would I go on the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee that had decided, in light of the public revelations and especially the learnings from Newfoundland, the CCCB, our bishops, decided they needed now to take their rudimentary attempted guidelines from 87 and now update it. I was advisory to that committee, and in 1992, they published From Pain to Hope, the first national guidelines. We were 6 months ahead of the Americans, and their approach is different. But the CCCB, From Pain to Hope, the first national guidelines in the world that again identified systemic and cultural issues, beliefs and practices underlying. I then put that aside and went on a very productive career in pediatrics and medical ethics. I had assumed that once you say to the church, you got to pay attention. If you want to diagnose this properly, you've got to pay attention to all these underlying issues. And then in 2011, we had the arrest of the then Bishop Raymond Lahey from the neighboring diocese of Antigonish, which I knew well. And I had a physical reaction to this of enormous, and I almost vomited when I heard the news, that the reason was that he had been arrested on the importation and possession of child pornography. He was a priest in Newfoundland at the time of our inquiry. He had just dealt a deal with victims in the Diocese of Antigonish so that they didn't have to go to court and revisit. He was lauded as someone who was being attentive to the restorative justice issues. And here he's arrested. And my thought was, I remember literally sitting down with the news saying how naive I was. I thought if you told the bishops from another area of expertise, you got to pay attention to these things, that they would pay attention to them. 2011, you look back and things had begun slowly to move on policies and protocols and education and forensic. They had slowly begun to move. But these bigger issues were still absolutely, absolutely ignored. And that's when I began to realize they were ignored precisely because this was an example of endemic pathology. The underlying issues of abuse of power, of the dominance of secrecy and silence in our church, the lack of a dialogue, the relationship between clergy and lay, the relationship between men and women, our understanding of morality, all of these issues, the bishops and the expression that I've used and quoted in what I've written and when I lecture, they have, and wonderful theologians have repeated this, are either unable or unwilling to address these issues. So I decided then to write the 2012 book. And I was very happy to write that book in the sense that I thought I'm now coming back to the commitment I made. I was trying to honor the trust that so many victims and their families and their communities and even priests who were non-offending priests who had opened themselves to me and trusted I would try to do something to heal the church. So I came back at the issue, wrote the book, and began then to identify issues. And that book was in large part to break the silence. It was to help people in parish communities, in small groups, in Catholic Women's League, to be able to sit and discuss the issue. And there's where the issue of the pathology, because this is very, very important. Many people think that the crisis is because bishops, priests, complicit laity didn't abide by the rules and regulations of the church. But the understanding of institutional factors says it's precisely because they did pay attention rigidly to the culture and to aberrations in the culture that were, this is the primary diagnosis, contrary to the mission, words, and witness of Jesus Christ. So I wrote that book then. It came out in 2012. And it's interesting, many dioceses used it. Many dioceses, they wanted nothing to do with it. Still maintaining, if you talk about it, you're going to make it worse. That, you know, come on, stop talking about this. It's a blip in the history of the long history of the church. So what really came to me in the writing of Still Unhealed was, here we have in 2013, right after my book is published, Holy Father Francis, whom I love dearly. Occasionally I want to speak to him with tough love, because he has a blind spot for a couple of issues, including women in the church. He's not my only issue, but one of them. But I love him. And he comes and he has two things about him. Everybody sees. I mean, when he walked out on that balcony, literally, I had tears running down my face. I never saw, he walks out and says, Buonasera. Oh my Lord, this is a Pope who talks like ordinary people. And then before he gives the papal blessing, down his head goes. Down his head goes, and he asks us to pray for him. I'm thinking, do I love this guy or what? Does he look more like Jesus than any Pope I've ever known or what? But the other thing you need to know about him, within less than a year of being Pope, he writes about the temptations of the church, okay, ideology, functionalism, and clericalism. And he does this incredibly scathing talk when it's the Christmas party at the Curia, called The Diseases of Leadership in the Church. Such a powerful set of analysis of systemic and cultural issues. The Diseases of Leadership was picked up in the Harvard Business Review, if you can believe it. So this is someone who understands deeper pathology. And what I wanted to do now was, now 6-7 years into his pontificate, how far have we gone? And why have we still not dealt with the temptations of the church and the diseases of leadership, all of which are relevant to the crisis?